Federal judges this past week ordered a redrawing of the lines between congressional districts in North Carolina.
Michigan's new political maps were drawn by a group of 13 everyday citizens rather than politicians, a possible compromise and model for other states in these divisive times.
And welcome to Gerrymandering 101. I promise you this won't hurt much. Gerrymandering is the manipulation of voting district lines, usually to give one party an advantage over the other.
Hi, I'm Matthias, and this is V1&O, the show where celebrities get cerebral. On today's episode, Hailey Kiyoko learns about gerrymandering. If gerrymandering sounds more like your high school weed dealer's name than a political practice, that is probably because this very unfair tactic was, in fact, named after a douchebag from Massachusetts named Elbridge Gerry. If your name is going to be Elbridge, I have nothing to say for you. We'll get more into how it got its name and what it means very shortly, but to put it really simply, gerrymandering is the redrawing of electoral district boundaries with the intent of creating unfair advantages for those running. Basically, by changing where certain districts start or end, the winner of an election can be drastically changed. But why has gerrymandering appeared more and more in the media over the past couple of years? What are the possible large-scale consequences of tampering with our democratic system in this way? And what can anybody do about it? That's what Hailey Kiyoko would like to know. Hailey Kiyoko is a 31-year-old singer, songwriter, performer, and actor from Los Angeles, California. Known fondly as Lesbian Jesus amongst her fans, Kiyoko is fresh off the release of her sophomore album, Panorama. Kiyoko's music often has to do with queer relationships, with songs such as Girls Like Girls being amongst her most popular. She once told Billboard that she wanted to help normalize lesbian relationships by setting an example via pop music. She's also been vocal about some of her politics, using previous tours to help register her fans to vote, as well as tweeting in opposition to previous shithead presidents. Panorama is still charged with societal commentary, whilst remaining very personal to Kiyoko, who suffered from mental and physical health issues after the release of her debut album. Now, Kiyoko is on tour and seeming more self-assured than ever. Our specialist on today's show is attorney Mark Gaber, a graduate of Stanford Law School and the senior director of redistricting at Campaign Legal Center, where he manages lawsuits to fight gerrymandering and racial discrimination in voting. Enjoy the show. Thank you again for taking the time to do this. I know that you have been touring this summer, and I wanted to start off there and ask, what is touring in 2022 like?
Tour has been amazing. I have been missing being on stage and performing and seeing my fans. And I'm so happy to be on tour with Lauv right now and performing the new music from my new album, Panorama, and hearing them scream the lyrics at me with so much passion. I missed it so much. I've just been in my bedroom, you know, for 2.5 years, just hopefully dreaming about one day being back on the road. So it's been really great. I'm finally used to sleeping on my bunk bed. So I got some good sleep last night. Took a couple of weeks to get used to it. But yeah, we're back in the swing of things. It's really exciting.
I think I saw or read in an interview that you did before that the last time that you put out a full-length album and you went on tour, you were kind of talking about how there's no guidebook to doing that. You don't really know, like, how do you take care of yourself? What do you eat? How do you get sleep? How do you manage on a bunk bed? And all these things where it might not seem like that big of a deal, but it's like to do that and to be getting on stage and performing for hours and hours every night. I think, you know, not that many people can relate. And I wonder if this time around you feel like I know how to handle that a little bit better.
Totally. I mean, I think I need to actually write a book and get all of these artists to contribute excerpts, because no one teaches you, right? You write music, you release a song, you're able to go on tour and you're like, oh, this is so exciting. And, you know, for like athletes, they have coaches and they're like, okay, you got to practice here and you do this and you find your routine and you get to like work together as teammates. space. And as artists, we're so isolated in our own spaces and worlds. And yeah, it took a toll. Like, it was really hard. You're waking up in a new city every day. You're like, okay, what time do I need to wake up? I need to make sure I have breakfast, lunch, and dinner. I need to make sure I'm stretching. I had a shoulder injury. And so being back on the road after 2.5 years of massive self-care has felt amazing, because I feel like, okay, now I know what I need to do to take care of myself, be able to enjoy myself, to be able to be present, take in the city. It's really just like time management. Mm-hmm. And it can be exhausting and taxing for so many artists. And there's just no rule book. You just go out there and you pray that everything works out and that your body shows up for yourself. And I've dealt with a lot of health issues and GI issues over the past couple of years, mental health issues. And you really have to give a lot back to yourself on the road, especially when you're touring so much. So many artists are touring so much during the year. And so I wish we had more of a community to help one another out. So maybe I need to get a book and have everyone share excerpts of what they do on the road to take care of themselves, because everyone has a different thing and you kind of learn from trial and error.
Yeah.
You know, it's unfortunately, that's just what it is. And I feel like we should have more of a community for touring, especially because we're all on tour right now. Like, I just missed Kehlani. She was at our venue the other day. And so we keep missing each other, but you know, we're all out here trying to enjoy music, but we also have to take care of ourselves and show up for ourselves too.
Yeah. There needs to be like a support group or something.
Yeah.
There's so many reasons why I don't think I would be able to tour the way that artists tour, because I'm such a fragile little toad in so many ways. The first thing I would tell the record label is like, there has to be a fucking therapist like with me at all times to deal with this. Like, even on stage, just kind of holding my hand off to the side.
Yeah, just like on the side.
I would need so much therapy. If I was in a bunk bed, my therapist would be in the other. That's what I would need to go through, what you guys go through. I've had friends also who are like photographers who've gone on tour with artists and stuff. And when I hear about tour life, I'm like, that's so fun. I'm 31, which is not even old. And I'm like, could I, you know, do that for months and months and months? But I know there's also so much payoff. And I get how artists get through it, because you see your fans and it's so much fun, but it's very like physically taxing. I know that to be a true thing, you know, so I get it.
Yeah. I think if you needed your therapist with you, you would make it happen. And I mean, I'm doing therapy every week virtually, so that's really helpful. I do acupuncture. I try to find a cool spot, you know, in a new city and kind of build like a health team across the country. I try to find some really good, like, yummy grocery stores or food spots and pool parks. And it's just like a balance, but it is a lot of work. It's like a home book report of like every single city, how to survive in every city of the country. Go.
Yeah. But maybe that's the key. I think it's like more planning and more boundaries. It's just, you know, when you're 22, you think you can wing everything, and then you realize like, maybe I can't.
Yeah. I think it's a sustainability, your longevity here.
Yeah. I wanted to ask about Panorama, the album itself, and just start by asking, what has been the most rewarding part of creating that album thus far? Like, what do you feel the most proud of?
I feel very proud that some of the songs on the album that I feel closest to, my fans also feel closest to. And that was very validating for me. Like, Panorama, specifically the song itself, is one of my favorite songs because it was the most vulnerable song to write. And Underground, they feel like my soul. And so to know that my fans also really resonate with my soul was really validating for me. And also being able to play it live and sharing that with them has been incredible. But, you know, as an artist, you create and then you just hope that other people will connect to it, or you're maybe not alone in those experiences and feelings. And for me, in my journey as an artist, I think it's been unlearning and unpacking how to get closest to my truest authentic self. Mm-hmm. And knowing that a good portion of my youth, I spent putting up walls and separating myself or protecting myself from really knowing my true self. And so it's been a really interesting journey, you know, from Girls Like Girls 2015 on, to peel back those onion layers and really allowing myself to be in my own body, be in my own voice. And I think Panorama, my second album, there's just a different feeling to it. I think I feel more clarity, and I feel like the music embodies a boldness and like an assurance and confidence that I didn't have before, or I had and wasn't allowing myself to really settle into.
Yeah.
And so that's been really rewarding to get to share that part of myself, because I've worked really hard on my mental health, my physical health. I've had to do a lot of self-care, a lot of team effort here with the health team and navigating the health care, which is a whole nother podcast we'll talk about later. Yeah,
let's do that one.
Be able to tour and show up for myself and navigate everything else that's going on in this world that can be so challenging for us.
I would love to talk about that so much more, because everything you just said also resonates. And I think so much of it kind of comes with age, which is just like a reality of, I think you just have to have a couple of these experiences. And I know you had, maybe it was just in the press release, but put out a statement of kind of having a bad sense of self-worth after your last album. And maybe, I guess this is an assumption, but maybe getting that self-worth from the wrong places, or, you know, whatever it is. And I just think that's something that we tend to do in our youth and then, you know, hopefully grow from. And it sounds like with this album, that's a little bit of what happened.
I think I went through a lot of health issues. And so I think the trauma from those experiences and not being able to show up for myself really challenged my worth. And I think that our worth should be unwavering. And unfortunately, sometimes if our body shuts down or our mind shuts down, we blame ourselves. And that is also not healthy and not productive in the situation when you're trying to work through hardship and navigate things that are uncharted territories.
Yeah, definitely. I think self-worth is a really tricky thing, because if you're a productive person, you're an artist, I mean, a lot of people would say for your mental health, you should base it on like, is there love in your life? Are you a good person? You know, all these things. But there's so many other things that I think we kind of get judged on. And I don't know, other people looking in and deciding our worth. So it can be a really tricky thing. Just because of the topic that we're going to be talking about, I wanted to segue a little bit into it. But before talking about gerrymandering in particular, I wanted to ask if you consider yourself a political artist. Like, is that, I don't want to say a label, but is that something that you'd be comfortable associating yourself with? I mean, people know what your politics are, basically. And that's not true of every artist.
I mean, as a woman of color, flaming lesbian, unfortunately, I am deemed an activist because I am still fighting for equality and rights as a woman, as a queer woman, fighting for my community. There's so much to be done. And so I was kind of born into activism and sharing my beliefs and standing up for people because I've had to stand up for myself.
Yeah.
I think every single human being on this planet has a purpose. And I think also it's very important to be allies for one another and to use your voice to make a change, and whatever you're comfortable with, that can come in many shapes and forms, right? But I think just like as an out and proud lesbian and being, you know, a woman of color, that's just a part of my life.
Yeah.
Because if I'm not outspoken and I'm not speaking for myself and for my community and others, then like, what am I doing?
Right. It's just being authentic. I mean, as corny as that might sound, it's just like, you're just being yourself.
I want to deem my name like a political artist because like being a lesbian is political.
Right.
Just existing, everyone loves to just dump their politics.
Right.
And tell us how to live.
Yeah.
So it comes with the territory.
There must have been people in the industry or whatever it is who've been like, don't share your views on things, or who've wanted you to be sort of more like treading the line. And there are a lot of artists who do that because maybe they're not parts of certain minorities or, you know, whatever it is. So has that been the case? Like, have people been like, maybe you shouldn't talk about this, or so who you're voting for, or, you know, whatever it is?
I don't think anyone's ever said that to me. Maybe trolls on the internet.
Okay. I kind of feel like if someone said that to you, you'd be like, look who you're talking to.
You know, again, as a queer person, you work so hard to cultivate love and compassion for yourself. And so once you're really able to accept yourself, and, you know, when I came out in my private life and then in the industry itself, I really just kind of had to go full throttle and be like, this is who I am, and kind of believe in myself and not really allow space for people to tell me who I should be. Because for so long, I allowed society to say, hey, you don't belong there. Hey, you don't belong on the radio. Hey, you can't be singing about girls, or hey, you can't do this. Like, everyone's been telling me I can't do things my whole life. So I think that I'm sure people have said that to me, but I just don't see it or I don't care.
Yeah. Good.
I don't care because there's so much to care about. And like, there's so many things to do in this world. And we need to focus on really loving ourselves first and then encouraging others to do the same.
Yeah.
That's hard. That is a hard thing to do. That is not easy. And that takes years.
Yeah, fair enough. With gerrymandering in particular, why is this something that you wanted to focus on or learn more about?
I thought it was really important to do this because I think it's important for myself and all voting citizens to be knowledgeable about this topic, given the current political climate in our country. I know the basics of gerrymandering, but it's so vital to know more. And I'm so excited to speak with Mark and learn more so we can figure out ways to potentially, hopefully, change the climate of our country and move it into a more positive direction. As we all know, it's been a very challenging, I was going to say years, but it's just been challenging overall. And the more knowledge we have, the more we can show up for ourselves. And the more knowledge we have, we're able to vote with confidence. And I think that's really important.
V1&O is sponsored by Yuke's, the one-stop destination for art and fashion. I love Yuke's so much, and it's not just because they were a first ever sponsor for this podcast. They actually have an amazing collection online. Head to yukes.com and see for yourself. I mess up on this podcast all the time. Some of it you hear, the rest of it you don't. That's thanks to Citizens of Sound, a one-stop shop we use for all of our podcasting needs here at V1&O. Citizens will help you with conceptualization, branding, production, editing, and distribution. So whether you're an artist, an actor, or you just think you have a compelling story to tell, podcasting might be the right route for you, and Citizens of Sound are here to help. Head to their website, citizensofsound.com, for more information. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm wondering if you can just start off by telling us a little bit about yourself and how you relate to the topic.
My name is Mark Gaber. I live in Washington, D.C. I'm the senior director of redistricting at the Campaign Legal Center in D.C., and that's a nonpartisan nonprofit that works on fighting for democracy, opposing gerrymandering, making sure folks have their voting rights protected, and trying to get money from having too much influence in our politics. So I am super excited that Haley picked my favorite topic, the thing that I spend all my days working on to talk about today. So thank you for having me.
Well, it's very nice to meet you, Mark. Thanks for your time. I feel like the best way to start this off for those that are listening who are very confused by the word gerrymandering. What is gerrymandering exactly? And also, like, how did it get that name?
It's an unusual name. So I guess the backup concept is redistricting. And that can be a good thing. Gerrymandering is when it goes bad. So every 10 years, the census, the government comes and does the census and counts how many people there are in our cities and our states, and then has to make sure that all the voting districts, so for Congress, for your city council and whatnot, that those all have the same number of people in them so that everyone has an equal, you know, say in their elected government. And so gerrymandering is when politicians decide that they're going to choose who their voters are instead of allowing the voters to choose who gets to elect them. It got its name at an 1812 dinner party. There was a governor of Massachusetts named Governor Elbridge Gerry. He later went on to become the vice president of the U.S., but he had signed into law a district that, you know, was shaped sort of like a salamander, and it was really unnatural. And the idea was they were picking up voters that they wanted and excluding voters they didn't want and like going around the neighborhoods. And it looked like a salamander. And so someone at this dinner party said to Governor Gerry, you know, this is the gerrymander, combining his last name and salamander. And it stuck since then. And honestly, if you look at the map today of congressional districts, you'll see salamanders. There's a salamander in Kansas, for example, that was just put into place to try to sort voters. And so it's the general idea that politicians will attempt to maintain their power and insulate themselves from having elections that, you know, have real consequences.
That's such a like sillier reason.
Oh yeah.
I was like, it's gonna be some old like Latin word.
No, there's no etymology.
Dude's last name. Great. Well, is gerrymandering legal?
Yes and no. So it's not legal to gerrymander on the basis of race. We see states do this, but You know, they'll do that sometimes to make it harder for people of color to kind of coalesce together and elect their preferred candidates. That's illegal. The Voting Rights Act says you can't do that. The Constitution gives everyone equal rights under law. And so that's illegal. Where it gets a little murkier is when the gerrymandering is done on the basis of party politics. Now, that's hard because in our country, it's become the situation that voters of color often vote for Democrats and white people often vote for Republicans. And so it gets difficult to sort out what's happening there. But the U.S. Supreme Court, which has done a lot of bad things recently, this is one of the bad things they did. They said that at the federal level, partisan gerrymandering can't be stopped in court. But state courts can, and many of them have done that. North Carolina and New York and Maryland and Pennsylvania and other states. And so it might be that, you know, at the state level, that partisan gerrymandering is illegal. And the reason partisan gerrymandering is bad is because it's really retaliation against voters based on their political preferences, based on their freedom of speech and what they think and how they translate that into voting and trying to stop that from having an effect at the ballot box. And so it's something we have to fight against.
It seems as the freedom of speech is very hypocritical because they're just trying to control that freedom of speech, huh?
Right. Yeah. As long as it's their speech, it's fine. Yeah, but if you go to the ballot box and express a view that's, you know, different than their
speech, we don't
want
to hear it. Yeah.
No. Silent over in the corner will draw you into a different district.
Yeah. Well, that is not good, Mark.
You heard it first from Kelly Kyo.
This is not good.
No.
So part of gerrymandering can be legal and some of it can be illegal. So like, what are some methods of fighting or combating gerrymandering, and are those methods successful? Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so there's a couple different things. So there's lawsuits. So like my job, I spend most of my time filing lawsuits against states that are doing this and against cities that are doing this, to make sure that everyone has an equal vote. Like, democracy works if everyone has an equal vote and an equal voice, right? And so the primary thing that I do in my job is file lawsuits. And that's a long, hard process. It takes years, resource intensive, it's expensive. But sometimes that works and we get really good wins. Sometimes that doesn't work and you might have judges who are unsympathetic. For the most part, at least our organization at CLC, we try to target lawsuits that we think there's a good chance of winning. And we really try to focus on making sure that voters of color don't have their voices drowned out. But there's other things that, you know, outside of lawsuits. So Michigan is a really great example. This was a state that had horrible gerrymandering decade after decade. The government was really not representative of the people. And the citizens got together. One person in particular, she's, you know, sort of like the Jesus of stopping gerrymandering. She's fantastic. In Michigan, Katie Fahey, and she got a ballot measure on the ballot, put it in front of the voters, got all these signatures to get it on the ballot. And Michigan passed what's called an independent redistricting commission. And as a result of that, it's now citizens and people who draw the district lines in Michigan. And the politicians are out of the process. They're not allowed to participate. They can't be on the commission. They tried. They sued. We defended the commission and they failed. And so as a result of that, for the first time in decades, Michigan's going to have representative districts where, you know, it doesn't matter if you're a Democrat or a Republican, you know, they're drawn so that it represents the state. And so that, you know, those are that's sort of the main tools that we see is using the Voting Rights Act in lawsuits, and then trying to get these commissions set up wherever we can.
And so I'm assuming the goal would be to have every state implement something like that, correct?
Absolutely. The more we can get this across the country, the better. When they draw the districts and you look at the election results, you see that they'll have either competitive races or the legislature will actually swing to the other party if the majority of voters vote for that party, which is kind of what a gerrymander is designed to prevent from happening. And so we want to see that everywhere. There's a bill in Congress. It was originally called For the People. Now it's the Freedom to Vote Act. And so we'd love to see Congress pass that because that would require commissions across the country and it would ban partisan gerrymandering. That's something that we'd love to see happen. It requires some changes in the Senate to get that done, but we'd love to see that happen. And the only way that can happen is if people vote and make this an issue that they talk to politicians about and that they talk to the representatives about.
Are there politicians that really believe that this is like a just thing, or does everyone kind of know that this is cheating? I mean, it just seems so blatantly immoral. I just can't imagine how the people who are doing it can justify it. I mean, let alone the Supreme Court, right? Like, human to human, if you sat with one of these politicians and had a drink, they'd be like, yeah, I'm being an asshole and I know it, right?
Yeah, well, unless you're so deluded in yourself that you think that, you know, like, benevolent dictator, I should be in charge regardless of what people think. And I think that there are actually some people, I've heard a North Carolina legislator who was asked about this say, well, I think that the Republicans are better and should be in charge. And it's not just Republicans, it's Democrats in Illinois, and it's Republicans in Wisconsin who do this. But that's such a delusional thing. I think most of them just get so disconnected from the people. There's like a shield between them and the people, and they don't even see that, hey, I'm not entitled to be a congressman. I'm not entitled to be a state legislator. Like, the people own my job, and my job is for them. And so I think that people get disconnected from that. And that's, you know, not all politicians are bad, but a lot of them are like that. But on the other hand, you see folks like Arnold Schwarzenegger, what was a fantastic spokesperson for us. He really fought to get rid of gerrymandering. California has one of these citizen commissions that works great. And so, you know, he was a fantastic spokesperson. So there's obviously quite a few bad seeds, but there are good ones as well. And who promote these commissions, even though they know it could end up meaning that they're going to lose their job.
As a non-professional from the outside, it seems like the major issue, or what we're fighting for, is for our country to have freedom of speech and be able to have the result of voting is reflect how the country feels. And, like, you know, it goes to like the Supreme Court taking away abortion rights. And even though most of the country support. And so it's like trying to bring us together where our country and the rules and how we're governing ourselves actually reflects the people and what the people actually want and need. So it's like when you were saying, you know, obviously Republicans want Republicans to win and Democrats want Democrats to win, but then let's have like fair results for elections, and let's have fair results of what the people actually want and need, depending on who those voices are. And it seems like obviously gerrymandering is controlling our voices in favor of politics and control and power, it seems to me, in layman's terms, right?
You're just a different kind of professional. That you've explained exactly why gerrymandering matters. And it's hard because, right, it's this like esoteric term. What does it mean? But it really controls whether we're going to have governmental policies and laws that match what people think. And the abortion example, I think, is a great one. There are states in the country right now, because of laws that were passed in like the 1800s, where abortion is illegal now because of the Supreme Court, and where the like 60-70% of the people don't want that to be the case. You know, Wisconsin is my home state is an example of this. Like, if you polled Wisconsinites, you would see a huge support for choice, but then the districts are drawn in a way where that's just not going to happen in the near term unless we fight and get rid of gerrymandering. And you can say this for a whole host of issues, but like, that's a really good example of one that just really connects for folks. Like, if you care about that, you have to care about gerrymandering, and you need to make it known, and you need to make this an issue and speak up about it, because there's lots of things we can do to stop it, but it gets sort of swept away and people don't think about it because it sounds like some Latin word, right? But it really does matter.
My last thing is, I mean, it's just kind of touching actually on what you just said, especially for Mark, is like, if you can flesh out a little bit like the disparity between maybe how many people understand what gerrymandering is and how much it actually impacts our country. Because I think people might understand what the word is and have like a rough idea of it, but maybe it doesn't feel so, so important. And I don't know if the average American knows what it is, because I didn't really know what it was even until, you know, a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's not a term that sparks a lot of awareness among people. I think people hear it in the news sometimes, particularly around like every 10 years we do this redrawing of the lines, and it maybe makes its way into the public consciousness that way. But it's sort of something, particularly in previous decades, I think it's actually gotten a little better. So like, some good news here. In the past, these maps were drawn, you know, behind closed doors, folks didn't really know what was happening. They would see, my polling station now votes for this person instead of that person. And it was kind of like this wheeling and dealing thing that happened in smoke-filled rooms. Technology has made a lot more transparency in this process. And as some states have, like California and Michigan and Arizona, have moved to commissions, and there's like public hearings and the map drawing happens in the public eye in some places. And it's really that contrast now between places like Texas and Louisiana and Mississippi, where it's still done, you know, sort of in closed doors, compared to other places that have brought it into the sunshine, that you see that difference. But it matters, like I said, and like Haley said, it really dictates what kinds of laws you're going to see. Because when you gerrymander a district, and this is one of the like really pernicious bad things that happens, what ends up mattering for these politicians is not the general election in November. And everyone, there's a general election this November, so please go vote for Congress. But the primary, where in the, you know, either in the Democratic Party or in the Republican Party, the candidates run against each other. And there's like this incentive then, because the district's been drawn so that they'll win, whichever party it is. And then there's this incentive for like the most extreme person to win that primary. And then the rest of the voters are like, these are my choices. You get people in Florida who are like, don't say the word gay in school. And that's how you end up with these crazy people in office, is because their districts were gerrymandered. And it created this whole cascade of bad incentives in our election system. And so when voters take charge and just say no more, like, we're going to pick the politicians aren't going to pick us, like we see in Michigan and Colorado and others, like that, that's when we really start to see where you go and you vote. And then the elected officials respond to that election and then pass the policies that people wanted. And so that's what we need to see happen across the country.
I mean, you touched on this a little bit, but how can listeners get involved? Obviously, vote in November. Are there other things that people can get involved in? Or is it just awareness and education and spreading the word to show up?
Number one is vote. Sometimes the best attempt at gerrymandering fails, and it fails because people show up and vote. And, you know, you can only do so much to drown out people's votes. So if everyone shows up and votes, then we can defeat this. So that's number one. Number two is, you know, you can reach out. There are constantly efforts all across the country in all states, and there's a federal effort for Congress to pass new laws to prevent this. And so even if you just call your congressperson or call your state legislator, you can go on the internet and find out who those people are. And call their office and say, hey, my biggest issue right now is I'm opposed to gerrymandering, and I want you to pass the Freedom to Vote Act, or I want you to pass an independent commission. When they hear from people, they actually, like, it matters to elected officials. When they hear folks calling their office line and they tally, you know, how many phone calls they got on a particular issue, and if it's genuine voices in particular of people that are in their districts calling, that they'll, you know, start to respond to that. And that's really when we can start to get, you know, these kinds of commissions. And, or if you see, you know, if you're in a state where you can put a ballot measure on the ballot, and there's organizations that are out in those states, so maybe like half the states in the country allow this, sign that petition for an independent redistricting commission, or donate if you have, you know, if you have the means, donate to those groups. Donate to the Campaign Legal Center at campaignlegal.org and help us fight this in court. There's all sorts of things that folks can do, but just being aware, talking to your friends about it, telling them to reach out to the folks. Just, it's a really easy to do, make a phone call and say, hey, I'm opposed to gerrymandering. What are you doing about it? To your member of Congress or your legislator. All of that helps raise awareness. And so we can make sure, we can keep making sure that there's transparency and that we can hopefully in the next 10 years finally end this process.
When is the next line thing? Is it in 10 years?
Yeah, so it's every 10 years. Some state, you know, there's no law that stops states from doing it more than every 10 years. Texas is going to do it again next year. Texas is obviously a huge state, a very important state. They're going to do this again next year because of a quirk in their state law. They have to. And so from January to May, if you live in Texas, my charge to you is to get on the phone regularly and go to Austin and go to the Capitol and testify and get your friends to submit testimony and just sort of drown them out. You know, they're one of the worst violators is the state of Texas. And the more attention and the more fight that people can bring, to make sure that their government looks like them. That's one great opportunity in a big state that's happening between January and May of next year. Otherwise, it's every 10 years. So a lot of it's done. We're fighting about it in court. You know, there's some local cities and stuff that have to do it yet, but it's basically sort of an every 10-year thing. So everyone get geared up for 2031.
Yeah. Well, that's really good to know. I mean, I honestly Googled gerrymandering and I looked at like the graphs and stuff like that. And for those of you listening, I'm a visual person. Like I'm hearing what you're saying, but when I visually see, like if you visually see the graphs where you see how many Republicans and how many Democrats and where everyone's at, and then if you just draw, is that the salamander you were talking about? Where you just
exactly.
Line is drawn differently, it changes the results like night and day, and it's mind-blowing. And for me, I was like, oh, no wonder our voices aren't being heard or our government isn't reflecting what we want and need. Duh.
Exactly. Yeah. And there's like games you can do online. One example that, you know, sort of just the bad effects that we often give or the distorting effects, like in North Carolina in 2012, I think the Democrats, if you added up all the votes for Congress that year among North Carolinians, they voted for Democratic candidates like 52-48. So it's obviously it's a very close state, swing state, but that 52-48 resulted in 3 Democrats and 8 Republicans being elected, even though the Republicans got 48% of the vote. And so that's what happens when you just surgically draw lines, packing the people you don't want to win a lot of districts into few districts and spreading apart your voters and spreading apart some of the other voters to, you know, precisely add up to 55% of the vote. You then look at the map and you see what it looks like. It looks like these bizarre, oftentimes looks like these bizarre districts that don't match your community. Like if you show someone that map and say, hey, does this make sense? Like, do these people have things in common? The answer is no, not at all. And so that's how we get where we are.
Holy hell.
But it's not all doom and gloom. We're making progress.
We're making progress for sure. And like having these conversations is very hopeful and inspiring for those listening, because just being aware and being educated and knowing the fact that we do have control of our future as the Supreme Court continues to beat us down. Like it's really important. Like this is extremely important. This should be everyone's number one priority.
That's the key takeaway.
But everyone should vote. November, vote.
Vote. Everyone needs to show up. No complaining. Just show up.
You can stream Panorama everywhere, as well as get tickets to Hayley Kiyoko's tour if you're in the U.S., or if you want to fly to the U.S. You can learn more about Campaign Legal Center and the work they are doing to fight for fair redistricting policies and the end of gerrymandering at campaignlegal.org. I wanted to also thank a couple of our new subscribers, Joe Van Tillinging and Luca Simafonte. Subscribe to our show on any platform and send a screenshot to v1no@gmail.com and we'll give you a shout out too. V1NO is produced by Ryan Killian Krause and myself. We are edited by Citizens of Sound. I'm Matthias, and we'll see you next time.